Hey guys, and welcome to the Moms and Mysteries podcast, a true crime podcast featuring myself, Mandy, and my dear friend, Melissa. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, Mandy. How are you?
I am wonderful. Spring is in the air, and you know that is something that is truly something I like.
I was like, where are I was going to say long time no see, but sure. Let's talk about the spring. Let's talk about the weather again.
Yeah. No, I know. Well, actually, we did see each other like 2 days ago, 3 days ago.
I know. And we flew on a Boeing plane. Which
we did. Successfully.
Well, almost not successfully. They moved our plane. We had to not ride the first one they gave us. And they said, we're going to put you on another one. This one doesn't seem to be working. So yay for us.
And then we thought there was going to be an issue with the second plane after we were already seated on it. And thankfully, there was not. That was just a little haha, gotcha moment.
He said either there's an issue or the light just needs to be reset, which is what I do with my car. And I don't trust a pilot saying that, for goodness sake.
Yep. But pilots are just enough. Like us.
I know. Like my husband will say, you know, if my tire light's on, especially in the cold months, he's like, just drive around and see if it comes off. And I'm okay, let's see what happens.
That's pretty much how I do everything with my car as well.
Terrible. But it was so fun. We had such a good time in Texas.
We did. Melissa, you got to meet my grandfather, yes, who is 90 years old. And I thought that was just so fun. Yes. And his lady friend. We had such a lovely dinner with them. And I was really happy that you got to meet them. We've known each other for a very long time. And I've told you all a lot about my family. So it was really nice that I was able to introduce you to my grandpa.
I love them. They were absolutely great. And I knew, like, I was thinking 80s, maybe, just based on, like, grandparent. Right. Like, age. When you said 90, my jaw literally hit the ground. I would have been fine with him piloting our plane. Like, this man is doing well. He is just fine.
Same.
Right? He was great. It was really neat. And it was nice to meet that part of your family. Like, I've met a lot of other people, but I hadn't met him. So that was really cool to kind of put that all together and see a more full picture of Amanda.
Yes. I like what you did there.
I did it.
So some of my family, as we just said, is from Texas. I, of course, am a Floridian at heart. And that kind of segues us really into the story we have this week very nicely. We didn't even plan that. But as a Floridian, I am someone who has grown up loving and appreciating the great outdoors. I've said so many times before on the podcast that I love living in Florida. I love being on the water, whether it's just sitting on the beach or enjoying a day on the boat with my family. Anything that's outside and there's water, whether I'm going to get in it or just look at it, I'm there. That's my favorite. Those are some of my favorite things in the world, truly. Boating has actually become one of the top ways that my husband and I spend time with our kids. And it just really creates endless opportunities for fun and excitement. And there really is just a special type of joy that comes from being out on a boat. I know not everyone agrees with me. I know many people who actually do not enjoy boating or find it to be like a fun activity to do.
I enjoy it until it's not. Like, if there is like some waves and I start thinking like, what does this mean? Then I'm over it. But for my birthday this last year with my family, my sister and my parents, we rented a boat and went like with the tubes and stuff. And it was the best birthday ever. Like, I could not think of anything better. So I was like, oh, I get why Mandy does this.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely have my limits. I'm not really like a risk taker. I don't like to go super fast and be on rough water or anything. Then I do start getting scared. But like a nice leisurely boat day where you're just kind of cruising along and making stops and, you know, just enjoying your family's company, you know, out in a different environment than your home. That's what I mean by like, I love boating. Yeah. I'm not doing anything crazy. I don't even like to get on tubes and be pulled behind the boat because that is scary to me. But I still love being out on the boat. But with that said, I am, as I also just said, someone who is fully aware of the potential dangers that are involved, like unpredictable weather conditions and rough waters. You always have the possibility of collisions with other boats or even colliding with an object that is submerged under the water that you can't see. And there's really a long list of things that could potentially go wrong. it's always in the back of my mind that if something happens out in the water, getting help to you like very quickly can be a challenge. And that's why the large majority of boaters that I personally know, including myself and my husband, take the safety aspects of it very seriously. And, you know, they understand that following the safety standards and the protocols is the best way to just avoid a terrible accident. The story that we have for you this week is really more of a mystery than a murder, and what makes it more unsettling is that the door for theories about what could have happened on Lana Stempien's boat in August of 2005 is really wide open. This is a story that leaves more questions than answers, and because of that, it's a story that has been living in my head rent-free and really has left me rattled. Lana Stempien was someone who had a deep love for boating, and she had the boating lifestyle embedded in her from her childhood. She was born in September of 1969 in Wayne County, Michigan, and raised in a loving household with her parents, Edward and Carol. Lana's dad was a former U.S. Coast Guard officer who started instilling an appreciation for the water as soon as Lana was born. She spent her childhood summers learning and navigating the lakes and rivers of Michigan with her dad. And by the time she was three, she was already water skiing, which I just said I wouldn't even get in an inner tube. So to think about like my three-year-old child on water skis, that's wild. Incredible. Yeah, that's really cool. By the age of 10, she was able to confidently drive a boat on her own. Lana's love for being on the water ended up evolving into a lifelong passion, and she was eventually able to buy herself a boat of her own, which was a 27-foot Wellcraft cabin cruiser that she named Sea's Life. So that's kind of a little play on words. So it's sea, like S-E-A, apostrophe S, life, but I feel like it's like Sea's the Day. It's like Sea's Life.
Oh, do you okay. See, yeah, I didn't catch I feel that, like a but lot yeah, no, I think you're right.
People use really clever names for their boats. I always think people are so creative when I see names of boats. Her cousin Tammy said that Lana was so proud and happy to have her own boat. She always put safety first, and some would even describe her as being a fanatic about boat safety and making sure conditions were always optimal before she went out. She really just was not known to take risks when it came to boating. Although Lana was exceptionally beautiful, it was her vibrant personality that really drew people in. Tammy said Lana had a radiant, free spirit, and another one of her cousins named John said Lana was fun-loving and she did everything on her own. She was very independent. A coworker described Lana's personality as being effervescent and said she was the type of person that once you met her, you just wouldn't forget. Others who knew her agreed that her physical beauty was far from being the best thing about her. She was truly an amazing woman all around. After high school, Lana started modeling, and for 6 years she traveled as an auto show model, although her ultimate dream was to become an attorney. She worked hard to complete law school, and she became the first lawyer in her family. She then went to work as an attorney for the city of Detroit.
When Lana was in her early 30s, she began dating Chuck Rutherford. His father was a well-known attorney in Michigan, and he grew up in Grosse Pointe Park. Chuck wasn't really the outgoing type. He was more serious and quiet, but those who knew him said he was nice. Even though he was a little more outwardly reserved, Chuck did have sort of a happy-go-lucky way about him. He would often accessorize with colorful socks and ties rather than just wearing the typical dark-colored suit to the office. Lana and Chuck met through their professions as lawyers. Chuck was working as an attorney for the Detroit prosecutor's office when they met, though he did later go on to start his own practice. After dating for about a year, Lana and Chuck moved in together and lived in Grosse Pointe Farms. This relationship was really different from some of Lana's past relationships in that Chuck was less athletic and more introverted than Lana's previous partners, but those who knew the couple said it was obvious that Chuck was in love with her. The owner of a restaurant that the couple went to quite often said that Chuck was very attentive and he would fawn over Lana. When Lana introduced Chuck to her Aunt Pat for the first time, Chuck told her, quote, "I really love your niece." And Lana's father approved of Chuck as well. He thought he was a good guy and said that he didn't see any red flags. The one major difference between Chuck and Lana was that Chuck wasn't really into boating like she was. But he loved Lana and he knew how important boating was to her, so he spent time on her boat with her just about every weekend. Chuck was even starting to learn how to operate the boat. In the summer of 2005, Lana started planning a boating trip on Lake Huron. They were going to leave from Lana's parents' house in Belle River, Canada, and make a 2-day journey to Mackinac Island. The plan was to ride up the St. Clair River out into Lake Huron, passing through Michigan's Thumb area and sticking close to the east shore until they made it to the island. I always forget that's what people from Michigan do. They like show their hand if you say, where are you from? And they show you where on the glove or where on the mitt that they're from.
What?
Okay. I say I always do that. My son's therapist is from Michigan, and she said when he asked where she was from, she said you take your hand like this, and then you point to where it is on the mitt.
Oh.
Okay, so always means one person in my life has told me that.
Okay. And it's a Michigan thing. I guess I wouldn't understand it.
There you go. You need the shirt. So the couple planned to leave for this trip on August 10th.
When it was time for this trip, there was rain predicted in the forecast, so Lana wanted to get out ahead of it and get on the way early. She promised her parents that they would check in every night, and then Lana and Chuck left at around 9 o'clock. After traveling all day on the 10th, the couple was tired and hungry, and they decided to dock in Oscoda for the night, which was about halfway to their destination. That night, the couple went to dinner with another couple who happened to be at the same dock and was parked next to them. The man from the other boat was named Richard, and he offered to drive Lana and Chuck to a restaurant to have dinner with Richard and his wife. Richard later said that the couple seemed really happy together, and it just seemed like they were very into each other. After dinner and drinks, everyone went back to their respective boats to get some sleep. Lana called and checked in with her parents, and she let them know they had made it to Oscoda, which was further than they expected to make that day. But she told them they were staying for the night, and they would be up very early the next morning to head out for the final leg of their trip. The next morning, Chuck and Lana were up and ready to go around 7 a.m. Lana checked in with her parents around noon that day and told them that they should be in Mackinac in about 2 or 3 hours. At around 12:30, they stopped at Presque Isle for gas, and this appears to be about halfway between Oscoda, where they stayed for the first night, and then their final destination, which was Mackinac Island. A man at this gas station named Gene filled up their gas tank while Lana and Chuck were joking with each other about who was going to pay for it. Lana asked Gene if there were any shallow water on the way to Mackinac, but he had told her about two places and she already knew about them and had them programmed into her GPS. At 1:45 that afternoon, Lana called her Aunt Pat and said they were around 2 hours away from Mackinac. She was in really good spirits and sounded happy and like they were having a good time, sounded like the trip was going exactly as planned. Lana mentioned that they were hoping to avoid rough water by getting an early start, but it hadn't worked out that way, meaning they did get the early start, but by the time it didn't matter. The water was already really, really rough. This was the last time anyone in Lana's family heard from her. Later that evening, Lana's parents were expecting a call to let them know that, you know, they had made it all the way to their final destination, but Lana never called. The next morning, when Lana still hadn't been in touch with her family, her dad, who, as we mentioned in the beginning, was a retired Coast Guard member, he contacted the Coast Guard to let them know that Lana and Chuck had not checked in and they could be in trouble. And we have so much more to get into after a quick break to hear a word from this week's sponsors.
Mandy, I was so excited when we found out that OneSkin was going to sponsor the podcast. Just last month over on Patreon, you and I were both chatting about how we had been on our own skincare journeys. And thanks to OneSkin, we both were able to just elevate it even more.
OneSkin's goal is to help your skin in the long run. It's all about longevity and feeling your best, whatever age you are. And their first ingredient is their proprietary OS01 peptide. This is literally the end-all be-all to getting rid of all those old cells that contribute to your skin aging. And having fewer zombie cells means you have healthier, younger-looking skin with fewer lines and wrinkles, as well as reducing age spots and giving you a stronger natural barrier.
I'm really so excited about OneSkin. I actually went to a dermatologist last year who pointed out some age spots on my face. And I said, those aren't age spots, those are freckles. And that's when I learned that, in fact, they weren't freckles. They were age spots, and I could no longer lie to myself. Since then, I've wanted to reduce my fake freckles / age spots, and OneSkin allows me to do that. The majority of my age spots are near my eyes, and on top of that, I feel like the skin around my eyes is just kind of dull now. It also looks paper thin while somehow also looking heavy. I don't know how else to explain that, but I've been using OneSkin's eye topical supplement and my skin honestly feels thicker under my eyes. And the whole eye area really looks brighter. And I've also seen a big reduction in age spots and even crow's feet.
OneSkin is more than skincare. It's about skin longevity, targeting the root causes of aging to help you look and feel your best at every age. Get started today with 15% off using code MOMS at oneskin.co. That's 15% off at oneskin.co with code MOMS. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. It's time to expect more from your skincare routine. Invest in the health of your skin with OneSkin.
There are a lot of ways to treat yourself out there, but one of my favorites is retail therapy. That is until I need to pay for this therapy, and then I realize the extent of my indulgence. Whether it's a self-care spree or grabbing all those things your kid needs the night before a science fair project, shopping is something we can't really escape. And now, instead of focusing on all the money you've spent, picture earning cash back on those purchases. That's where Rakuten comes in, transforming your shopping experience into something even more rewarding.
Rakuten acts as your ultimate shopping companion, rewarding you with cash back on your purchases. And if you're worried this doesn't include things you actually buy, fear not. The list includes over 3,500 stores, including Levi's, Urban Outfitters, and Tarte Cosmetics. The list goes on, spanning numerous categories like fashion, beauty, and even groceries. Rakuten is undeniably the smartest way to save money while shopping. Plus, with cashback rates fluctuating daily, the savings can be substantial.
Using Rakuten is really a breeze. You can simply visit their website or download their app free of charge, and then you're all set to earn cashback at over 3,500 stores across every category. Cashback is sent out every quarter with a check or through PayPal, and it comes just in time to use it on another science fair project.
Cashback rates change daily. Start all your shopping at Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app to start saving today. Your cashback really adds up.
And now back to the episode. So before the break, we were discussing this trip that Lana and her boyfriend Chuck were taking and kind of figuring out this timeline for the last time anyone's heard from Lana as they are getting ready to depart on their boat. And at this point, her family hasn't heard from her, and so her dad has reached out to the Coast Guard. And about an hour after her dad called the Coast Guard, Lana's boat was spotted by another boater named Tom, and it was spotted about 9 miles north of Mackinac. But chillingly, there was no one on board. The location of this boat was also unusual and way off course. The engine was idling in neutral and the stereo was still playing as the boat drifted aimlessly in the middle of the lake. I imagine that's really creepy to come upon.
100%. That would be so scary to come up on and just not knowing like what is going on, like how many people were on board, like how, because you don't know how many people you're looking for potentially. Right. That would be really scary to come upon.
And with the music though, I don't know why the music like brings it to this extra eerie level.
For sure. Yeah. Well, because it's like it just kind of Right, exactly. Of course, just seeing an empty boat in the middle of the lake is already eerie enough. But having the radio on, you're like, okay, like someone didn't intend to like leave this boat.
Right. Someone was just here. According to Tom, it had been a rough morning on the water, which we already kind of knew about from Lana's conversation earlier. Even Tom's 52-foot cruiser was having a hard time with the high winds and waves. In fact, that's actually why Lana's smaller boat caught his attention. Tom said the boat looked like a cork bobbing around in the water, and he thought whoever was on it must be in trouble, so he called it in. When the Coast Guard arrived, they tried using their loud hailer to see if they could get a response from Lana's boat, but there was no activity. When officials finally went aboard the boat to check things out, they found out that there was no one on it. For the next 26 hours, the Coast Guard searched a 1,600-square-mile area, but they were unable to locate Lana or Chuck, so the search was called off. Lana's family was completely distraught and absolutely shocked to hear that something had gone wrong out on the lake. As we said before, Lana is a highly experienced boater, and she adhered to all these safety protocols and boating rules, and like that was just part of it. Like, she was not going to put herself in danger. She knew what to do. Lana's family thought that they would still find this couple alive somewhere, and they were hoping to find them clinging on a life jacket, stranded on an island, something. About 20 members of Lana's family immediately jumped into action to help search for them. They rented planes, helicopters, and jet skis, while other family members went around northern Michigan handing out flyers. In the meantime, the state police started investigating the couple's disappearance. There really wasn't much to go on, and there were hardly any clues that were left behind. Nothing about the boat was unusual or suspicious, and there was no evidence of foul play. It really looked like somebody had just simply walked right off the boat. There were no signs of a struggle, no blood, no damage. Everything of value, including their wallets and money and clothes on the deck, were all still there. Since there wasn't really anything to go on, authorities were left to theorize various things that could have happened, including the idea that the couple had gone for a swim and the boat got away from them and they drowned. Of course, the problem with this theory is it's not swimming weather. The water's only 65 degrees and the weather conditions made it rough, so it's unlikely they would have decided to go swimming. I could see if this wasn't like a boater and somebody's like, this is the one day I have out on a boat, I'm going to swim in the water. But if you're doing it all the time, there's not that need, you know?
Right.
They also said that the swim ladder wasn't down, so if they got off the boat, they weren't getting back on it because you really couldn't. So even if they had gone swimming, though, Lana would know to do the most basic thing and anchor down her boat before she got off the boat. As her dad Tom put it, you don't just jump in the water and then swim after your boat. They also found an empty vodka bottle, and that led to theories that maybe the couple drank too much alcohol and got careless, but Lana's coworker said she would never drink while operating a boat. She always waited until she was docked or she was on shore if she was going to have a drink. So the search was really going nowhere, but Lana's family was still hopeful that the couple would turn up. Lana had promised to be back from their boat trip in time for a heart surgery her dad was having on August 16th. But when that day came and went and she hadn't called, her Aunt Pat knew that things weren't looking good. She said that Lana would have never missed her father's surgery.
About 2 weeks passed, and there was still no sign of the couple. But on August 24th, a Huron Beach resident was sitting outside when she saw something that seemed out of place. When officers responded, they found that this out-of-place object was actually the body of a naked woman. It was soon confirmed that the woman was Lana Stempien. She was found wearing only her jewelry, which consisted of a necklace, a ring, and an Omega watch, which I'm not familiar with that brand, but apparently it's like a very fancy watch. So based on these new details, investigators formed a new theory that Lana had gone skinny dipping and then something went wrong. But again, this is still in that same vein of they went swimming, and that theory doesn't make any sense to Lana's family. And furthermore, they said that Lana always took her jewelry off before she went swimming, and she also put her jewelry in the same exact place each time. So she would take off her watch, take off her rings, and then she would put the rings through her watch clasp so everything is, you know, stays together. And then she would attach the watch clasp to the steering wheel so nothing gets lost. And this watch is something that, as I said, was very special to her. She took very good care of it because she actually loved it so much. It was a gift from an ex-boyfriend, but this watch cost $1,500, and she had recently spent $300 just to have it cleaned and resealed. So her family like did not believe that she would just jump in the water with this watch on willingly.
Right.
Again, as we said before, it's also really too cold to be swimming, much less skinny dipping. So they're thinking that's not what happened here. An autopsy determined that Lana's cause of death was drowning, but her body showed no signs of trauma, so her death was ruled an accident. 3 months later, the toxicology report came back, and some alarming new information was revealed. Lana was found to have a high level of carbon monoxide in her system when she died, and she had negligible levels of alcohol in her system, which ruled out the theory that she had gotten intoxicated and fallen off the boat or had some kind of a careless accident. So there's really only a couple of ways that someone on a boat would be exposed to high levels of carbon monoxide. So the theory that the couple went for a swim then evolved to include the possibility that they were swimming behind the boat that was running and they got too close to the exhaust. Once again, Lana's family just refused to believe that could have happened. Any boater with experience, as much as Lana had, would certainly know that you don't ever get off the boat and swim when the motor is running. And so if she was out in the water swimming by choice, none of those conditions would have, you know, been present. She wouldn't have had the boat running. She would have had the anchor down. The swim ladder would have been down. Basically, everything points to they didn't get in the water willingly to go for a swim.
An alternate theory was presented that the carbon monoxide fumes had somehow leaked into the cabin. But then, of course, how would it be possible for them to be poisoned and fall out of the boat? Later, after Lana's boat was returned to her family, they used it to go search for her. Nobody who was out on this boat got dizzy, sick, or nauseous, which really made her family doubt even more that something was wrong and, you know, fumes were going into the cabin because they experienced no symptoms you would normally have with a carbon monoxide leak. In yet another theory, it was suggested that Lana may have been thrown from the boat on purpose, and when she swam to the back platform to try and get back on, she was overcome with the exhaust fumes, passed out in the water, and drowned. Lana and Chuck's families were desperate for answers, so they started working with an attorney named Jack Coate, who specialized in reconstructing events surrounding the disappearance of boaters.
That is a very specialized...
I know.
Whenever I read that, I was like, wow, that's actually incredible that someone does that, because, like, if you are in this situation, these families, that's the, you know, there is someone out there who has experience with this exact thing that you need, which is, like, amazing, but I was kind of, like, blown away. I was like, wow, that's, like, a very specific...
Yeah.
Thing to like a very niche thing to go into.
After researching the case, though, Jack came to the conclusion that the possibility of foul play was at least 50-50, and that just because there were no obvious signs of trauma doesn't mean that there was no foul play involved. In fact, Jack thought a few of the details could point to foul play, including the fact that Lana was wearing that Omega watch when she was found dead, and that apparently Lana's tennis shoe was found on the boat, but it had a knob from her boat's GPS bracket strangely wedged into the sole of her shoe. So this was kind of confusing for me, but the way this guy Jack explains it is that even if you're taking a hammer and trying to pound this, I guess, GPS bracket knob, you'd have a hard time doing it. So like for it to be stuck, maybe I don't understand what he's saying.
I couldn't really picture exactly like the piece that he was describing, but I know just like from, you know, being around boats and stuff, there's a lot of little pieces of like metal things and knobs, you know, that have different, either a pointy end, I don't know, something like that. So I guess he was saying like something was obviously broken off of the GPS system and it was in the bottom of her shoe or into the sole of the shoe. But he was saying like in order for it to actually go through the sole of the shoe, like it would take a lot of force to get that to stick into the shoe. Does that make sense?
Got it. Yeah. I mean,
kind of. Sure. I know. I feel like it's a little vague and we don't know exactly. I don't know exactly what the piece looked like. So that would probably help if I knew like what kind of a shape it was or anything. But I'm thinking like a knob and then it had maybe like a post or something on the end.
Okay.
I'm not really sure.
Yeah. The Coast Guard told Lana's family that the only way that this knob could have been embedded in the shoe was with force. And the same shoe also had a large tear. And Jack believed that these things were evidence of a violent struggle. So additionally, when Lana's boat was discovered by this other boater, Tom, he noticed a pair of blue bumpers attached by a line about 30 to 50 feet away from the boat. So a safe boater would never have this line hanging off the back of their boat, because it could get tangled in the motor and cause serious problems. I know this from below deck, of course. But more importantly, Lana didn't actually have blue bumpers. She had white ones. Lana's family tried to reach out to the marine stores in the area and ask for descriptions of what she had purchased when she had been in some of those. And there was no evidence that she ever bought any blue bumpers. And strangely, by the time the Coast Guard got to the boat, the blue bumpers were gone. And lastly, Jack thought it was highly suspicious that around 12 hours after anyone had heard from this couple, that the GPS tracking device was turned on at 1:22 a.m. At that time, the GPS showed the boat about 10 miles out in Lake Huron off Nine Mile Point, which is about 12 miles from where it was found 8 hours later. The GPS device was searched for more data, but it was found that part of the data was missing, which according to the company that manufactures the system would only be possible if someone intentionally deleted it. And we still have more to get into after one last break to hear word from this week's sponsors.
Our next sponsor's new Color Me pajama sets are about to be your kids' latest obsession. Thanks to Caden Lane, your little ones can wind down at bedtime in adorable pajamas that they can color on. I can't think of anything cooler as a kid than my mom telling me to color on my clothes. Not only that, but after they are washed, you can do it all over again.
Caden Lane makes incredibly cute and stylish kids' clothes that almost almost make me want to have another one just to enjoy the cuteness Caden Lane has to offer. My niece Nora is actually the perfect kid to try out different styles, and she has big thoughts on it. What do you think, Nora?
I really like the swimsuits because the decorations, and I can't wait to wear it to the beach.
There are tons of clothing lines out there, but Caden Lane has over 70,000 five-star reviews and millions of customers. And that's because they make clothes your kids actually want to wear while still being made of high quality that you can love and feel good about buying.
Summer will be here before we know it, and it's a great time to try Caden Lane. Their new swim collection is all about worry-free fun in the sun. You can keep your little one's sensitive skin safe with their UPF 50 Plus sun protection swimwear, which blocks 98% of harmful UVA and UVB rays. Plus, moms will definitely get this. It'll minimize those sunscreen fights that inevitably happen on days in the sun. And plus, these bathing suits are so cute and they're made to last and made to match thanks to Caden Lane's matching swimsuits for the entire family.
Caden Lane is your one-stop shop for all your newborn, infant, and toddler apparel. Head to cadenlane.com/moms and use code moms for 20% off your order. Once again, that's CadenLane.com.
Thin-haired friends rejoice. Let me introduce you to Vegamore, the solution I found in my quest for thicker hair. Aging may bring its perks, but a lush mane is definitely not one of them. And while my hair was thicker when I was younger, it's definitely thinning lately. But fear not, because Vegamore has come to the rescue.
Vegamore's products are a game changer, offering a double win. Not only do they work wonders on my hair, leaving it looking and feeling healthier, but they also boast clean ingredients. Vegamore is all about cruelty-free formulas, steering clear of dubious substances like parabens and hormones.
I jumped on the Vegamore bandwagon last year with their Grow Serum and recently expanded my arsenal with their Grow Shampoo and Conditioner, and my hair is singing its praises. It's revived with added shine and devoid of any harmful chemicals. To be frank, if it's not easy, I'm not going to do it. So when I tell you that using the Grow Serum is a piece of cake, you should believe me. I just put a few drops on my dry hair before bed, and it's like a celebration for hair growth. I've even noticed some baby hairs making an appearance, eagerly awaiting their transformation into thick hair with two C's on my head.
And let me tell you about the demand for the Grow Serum. It's really off the charts. They are flying off the shelves, with one sold every 15 seconds on their website alone. And we can see why. Elevate your hair wellness routine this year with Vegamore. For a limited time, get 20% off your first subscription order by going to vegamore.com/moms and use code moms at checkout. That's vegamore.com/moms, code moms, to save 20% on your first order. vegamore.com/moms, code moms.
It's sunny and beautiful outside, which means I want to be out there. And while I can't just leave the house to vacay at a moment's notice, I sure can pretend. Welcome to the fabulous universe of June Parker's escapades in June's journey. Forget about packing your bags. We're taking you on a roller coaster without a passport. Say goodbye to the mundane and get ready to dive into a whirlwind of drama and elegance with our leading lady, June Parker.
Whether you're itching for a juicy mystery or just desperate for a break from the daily grind, June's journey is your ticket to excitement. Follow June as she unravels family secrets and tiptoes through the tangled mess of her sister's demise. It's like crashing a fancy party, minus the small talk about the weather. Although, we secretly love that too.
So dust off your virtual flapper dress and buckle up for a wild ride where every corner holds a clue and every twist keeps you on the edge of your seat. But hold on to your pearls. June's journey isn't your average mobile game. I'm knee-deep in the fifth chapter, and trust me, it's more fun than a barrel of monkeys. With stunning scenery and catchy tunes, this game oozes sophistication and class. Don't waste another second. Jump into June's world and let the adventure begin.
Discover your inner detective when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
And now back to the episode.
So we've been talking about the disappearance of Lana Stempien and her boyfriend, Chuck Rutherford. They had gone out on a 2-day-long journey to get to Mackinac Island, and they never arrived. They never checked in with Lana's parents. They ended up finding Lana's boat completely unmanned. There was nobody aboard, and nothing really seemed like it looked amiss. The radio was running, and they really didn't have a lot to go on. So they have formed multiple different theories for what could have happened to this couple. A lot of these theories are kind of centered on the idea that they got in the water and went swimming, and something went wrong, and they drowned. But Lana's family does not believe any of this. right before we took the break, we were talking about how they had learned that the GPS system on the boat had logged some activity after the time that they were the couple was last known to be seen, and they have now discovered that it appears that some of the data from that GPS system had been deleted. So to add to the speculation and theory surrounding this disappearance, stories started to emerge about Chuck being abusive towards Lana. It was revealed that Lana had apparently made a comment to her bartender friend a few months before their disappearance, and she said that if anything ever happened to her, they should look at her boyfriend. Lana's friend Andrew, who worked with her, he was her coworker, and later ended up becoming the attorney for her family, looked into this comment that she made, and he learned that Lana had seen word of Lacey Peterson's murder on TV the same night that she made these comments, like, if something ever happens to me, look into my boyfriend. But witnesses that were at the bar that night who heard her say that felt like it wasn't really in jest. They felt like she was actually being kind of serious, and some of them said she seemed nervous after she made this statement. Andrew also learned about another incident where Lana and Chuck were at a bar in Detroit when Chuck started acting belligerent, and when Lana told him that he needed to get himself together and, you know, calm down, he started yelling, cursing, and calling Lana names in this bar. So there was another couple that stood between Chuck and Lana while he was going off, and eventually two Detroit police officers who were just having dinner had to forcibly remove Chuck from this establishment. After that happened, Lana started thinking, you know, maybe this relationship isn't going anywhere. She started thinking about breaking things off with him. Chuck's own friends, though, deny that he would ever behave this way, and they say that he was not a violent or hot-tempered person. In January of 2006, it was revealed on Dateline that Lana actually did talk to someone else after talking to her aunt on the afternoon of August 11th. So as we mentioned earlier in the story, it was previously thought that the communication she had with her aunt at 1:45 p.m. that day was the last time anyone ever heard from Lana. But there was actually another call that she made at 1:59 p.m. It was a call that she made to another man, and she left him a one-minute-long voicemail in which she was talking about plans to meet up with this man when she was on the East Coast for a wedding that she was going to be attending without Chuck. The voicemail Lana left said, quote, "Hey, when you called me, I was in the middle of Lake Huron heading to Mackinac. I'm not really, really sure what day I'm going to get to Boston, but I was in the middle of the lake when you called, so I'm calling you back. I'll be in Mackinac in probably about an hour, so you can call me back. Bye." So according to Lana's friend Andrew, this man that she was calling was someone that Chuck had some kind of knowledge of and was jealous of and had even expressed some type of agitation about, you know, when Lana would talk to this person on the phone. So this new information really made way for a new theory that Chuck had overheard Lana having, you know, leaving this voicemail for this other guy, and that led to an argument, and that argument resulted in Lana's death.
So after the story was featured on Dateline, they did get a few tips called in. One tip was from two sisters who wanted to remain anonymous, but they realized that they had some important information to share. They said that just before 3 p.m. on August 11th, they saw a boat that was too close to the rocks and moving erratically. They said it actually didn't seem like anyone was driving it. Then they said they saw a second boat speeding away that looked like it was leaving the harbor going across the lake. Another tip came into police from a man named Reggie, who said that in June of 2005, so this was just a couple months before the disappearances, he was driving past a Detroit restaurant when he saw a big man physically assaulting a woman and trying to force her into a vehicle while he was hitting her. He said he watched as the woman got away and was chased by the man in his car. This car then crashed into another car, the airbag deployed, and then the car drove off on the wrong side of the street. He said that when he saw the news and the photo of the missing couple, he knew they were the couple he saw outside the restaurant that night. They get a lot of tips.
They do.
I'm more inclined to believe the first one than I am the second one, to be quite honest.
Because, okay, so you were just driving by and you saw, and then you saw, and then over a month
later, did you not call police?
That's what I'm saying. And so anyway, I'm not saying it's not true. I'm sure that this man did see some altercation, but I feel like it might be a stretch to then say it was this couple.
To know that it was them. Yeah, I don't have that kind of memory, so I couldn't do it.
Right.
So other theories about the case suggested that pirates got them, or that the mafia had a hit on Chuck because of his background as a criminal prosecutor. But the area that we're in isn't known for piracy.
Oh, really? The Great Lakes isn't a big pirate hotspot?
Turns out it's not. And Jack Coates said that even if someone did have this vendetta for Chuck, obviously going to capture him in the middle of Lake Huron is probably not the easiest way to do it. And there is yet another theory, and that's that when Chuck and Lana stop in Oscoda for the night, or when they stop in Presque Isle for gas, something happened and maybe they ran into someone on the water that they didn't hit it off with and things went sour. We know that Lana called people the next day, so it doesn't really seem like anything happened. It feels like that would be something you'd mention, like, we've been chased by people on the lake.
Right, or we got into, like, a fight with someone and, you know, they're following behind us or something like that. Yeah,
right.
That's kind of, that would be the only way that they would say something happened that first night, and then the next day the people who were angry with them tracked them down in the afternoon.
That's wild
and,
revenge.
Right, yeah. Exactly, for what? So, yeah, I feel like that's also a little far-fetched. So as of today, though, Chuck's body has not been found. Some people think it's very strange that they never found his body. But a detective that worked on the case said that it's really not that weird or that unheard of for bodies to enter the water and never be recovered, which in itself is a horrific thought.
Yeah.
He said that half the people who drown in Lake Huron are never found. Chuck's father maintained Chuck's law practice for 3 months after he went missing. On August 3rd, 2006, Chuck's parents petitioned the court to legally have Chuck declared dead. So that was only about 1 year after this disappearance. In Michigan, you actually have to wait 5 years before a missing person can be declared dead. But his family wanted to try after 1 year because they just couldn't take all the speculation anymore. The judge's ruling said it was clear to the court that Chuck was deceased and was the victim of a boating accident. So Lana's family was really, really upset with this ruling. They just didn't accept it because they, you know, Lana's body had been found, but they'd never found Chuck's body. And so Lana's family felt like police really had not done their job thoroughly and properly. And instead, they had just made up their mind that this was an accident and that both of them were killed. And they basically just felt like they could have looked more into this.
Right.
There was really a lot of tension between Lana and Chuck's families after this. Chuck's parents wouldn't let Lana's parents into the house that Lana and Chuck shared. They also took her parents to court, demanding that they give back personal items of Chuck's, including his shampoo in a cup, which I don't really understand. Grief is a crazy thing. I will say that people do things that do not make any sense when they are in a situation like this and they don't have answers and everything feels out of control for them. And this is like two individual families that have like – they're both going through the same thing, but it's not the same – you know what I mean? Chuck's family doesn't have the closure and the answers that Lana's family has. And like – but both families still have no answers. So it's a very, very difficult situation. But this does seem a little – it seems like they were just kind of doing the petty back and forth with each other just to kind of hurt each other at this point. So this made Lana's family, of course, really upset. You know, they haven't even been allowed to go into the couple's house. And now the parents are like, we want Chuck. They're taking them to small claims court, you know, dragging them through a legal process because they want Chuck's shampoo and things like that. Right. So that's the type of kind of relationship that they have had since the couple's disappearance. In 2010, the lead detective told Our Detroit that the case was still open, but it was not actively being worked on. They said they've gotten tips that people have spotted Chuck, but these tips have never led them anywhere. And as it stands, that's the end of the case. They have never found Chuck's body, and they don't really have a solid answer about what happened to this couple on the boat because there was really no clues left behind. So I actually have a theory, and I mean, I don't know. I feel like I'm just kind of basing this only on my knowledge of like boating and things like that. And I was thinking about how Lana was found naked and had her jewelry on. So the one thing that made me – and also all the stuff about the boat still running, all that.
Right.
And how she just would never do that. The only thing I came up with was that something happened and Chuck fell off the boat. And Lana stripped down because they were actually last seen wearing sweatshirts. As we said, it was chilly outside. they always tell you if you have to jump in the water, you like to save someone, you need to take all your clothes off. Don't go jumping in the water with a sweatshirt and shoes on. But it would explain why she would, like, she could have quickly undressed trying to jump after Chuck and help him, and of course would have still had her jewelry on. But then they did not both make it back on the boat, clearly. I don't know, like I said, but I feel like that is a very, to me, that seems like a logical theory, because it explains a lot of, like, it explains the way that she was found and, you know, kind of like why she wouldn't have taken off her jewelry. It explains, like, why the boat may have just been in neutral idling, because, you know, it could have been a right. very hectic situation on board, and that could be why she didn't anchor the boat. That's what I think could have happened. I know there's all this other speculation about, you know, how Chuck treated her in their relationship and all of that, but I feel like there's no evidence to point towards. And people who saw the couple during this trip said that they seemed like they were very happy and seemed very into each other. I don't think there's anything that points to the suggestion that Chuck necessarily did anything to hurt her. I do think it was a really, really tragic accident. But I do think, personally, I think something happened that made Lana strip her clothing, like, and jump in the water in an emergency situation.
Right. That makes the most sense, honestly, out of everything we've heard and the theories they've given, because she is so experienced, so she's not going to just do these things. But you can see how in an emergency situation, time is of the essence, and right. so she's going to do what she has to do to get him back. And then if they don't have the swim ladder out and the water's rough yes. and they're trying to get in and you're behind the boat yes. and trying to, then the carbon monoxide thing right. makes total sense. Yes. So
that, well, that was going to be my other thing is that, also from experience, it is very, very, very hard to get on the back of a boat if the swim ladder is not down, especially yeah. if the waves are rocking and the boat's going up and down. Like, You have to have a lot of upper body strength. I mean, like, a lot. Like, I cannot mm-hmm. even pull myself up on the back of the boat and, like, without the ladder. Like, that's just not something I can do. I feel like the average person probably can't either. So during that struggle, as you said, you can see how then the carbon monoxide comes into play and
yeah.
things just go really, really terrible. And it's just
really fast.
A terrible accident. So that's what I think happened. I don't think that Chuck hurt Lana. Of course, I certainly hope not. And, you know, his family and friends definitely don't think that's what happened. So just a really, really sad story. I feel like it's a cautionary tale also about just being really careful, you know, whenever you're out doing things that you enjoy, and boating especially and being on the water especially, because it is very scary. Things can happen very fast.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, Melissa, real quick, are you ready to move on to last thing before we go? Before we go.
Let's go.
Alrighty, so we've been talking about Love is Blind. It is officially over, woo, at least for the next 2 or 3 months until we have a new season. So we've been talking about it. You guys know we are not super duper into this season. Well, it's not that we're not into it. I thought I was into the season. I thought there was plenty of juicy stuff.
The beginning I was.
Yeah. I think that things that annoyed me the most is that, like, we barely got to see anybody even make it to the going down the aisle. And, like, I want to see a bunch of weddings. That's why I watched the show Love is Blind. The whole point is for them to get married. So it's annoying that you start off with so many couples and then you only get to see two of them even go down the aisle. Like,
yeah. And only one said yes. I'm thinking Love Isn't Blind, you idiots.
Right. The show has just proven itself wrong. So, so that's the deal with that. So we had all the drama. We've already discussed it. And then now the only thing that is new is the reunion that came out. Actually, we're recording this on Thursday, so that just came out yesterday.
At like 8.
At like 9 p.m.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. It wasn't released until the beginning of the day. PM. It was so stupid.
Exactly. And I started to, like, after I washed my face and got ready for bed last night, I was like, oh, I'm going to turn it on. And it was like 10 p.m. And I was like, no, I'm not. I'm just going to bed. So I didn't end up watching it. But I feel like I didn't need to. I feel like, and you did, Melissa, so we can talk about it a little bit, but I feel like I didn't need to watch it, because another thing that happened a lot this season is there were so many spoilers out on the internet. Like, even before things aired or anything, I always try to avoid, like, if a new episode has just released, like, for that day, if I haven't had a chance to watch, I will avoid or whatever. But there was stuff coming out, like, before episodes were even released, and people were following everyone's TikToks, and they're, like, picking apart things, and it's like, people, anyway, I feel like I already knew everything. So
it's always like, let's see what happens next, or wait till next week, you know, whatever, TikTok dance and them zipping their lips or whatever. I don't care. I don't care. And this reunion taught me that I truly don't care about these people to a level I didn't know existed. So here's the thing. The Real Housewives reunions are amazing because they're edited. There's no audience. These sucked because, while thank God it wasn't live, there is an audience. So it's a lot of, ooh, I don't need that.
It's very like
Full House 1994. Don't need it.
Yes. Yeah.
So anyway, all we really got, the really good parts of it, was Trevor coming out there and them reading the text messages that he basically had a whole girlfriend, a whole girl he loved, literally was saying he loved her. And then he goes on the show and he's like, I went on for good reasons and I went on for bad reasons. But he never bothers to say what the good or the bad reasons are. He's just like, yeah, he's like, I'm a toxic person. I'm like, then why would you sign up for this? That,
clearly.
Come to find out, I don't know that she's the one that picked him, but guess who we find out is actually one of the talent scouts or whatever for Love is Blind now?
Who?
This was a big drop. Kwame and Chelsea. Chelsea is.
She's like looking for people?
Yep. She's like part of the selection process now.
I don't like that.
I don't either. I don't either.
Why are you calling it talent?
I couldn't remember the word. Honestly, she probably said talent, and that's why I'm saying it.
Okay.
That is good. Yeah, I don't know why I did that. But she's like part of it. But I'm thinking, like, how are these people? How are they not like, we need to see your Instagram photos, or like, we need to see some of your last messages, or who could we ask about your character? Anything. What are they asking people? Because Trevor had a whole girlfriend and a whole life.
Yeah. So actually, I saw the questionnaire for applying for Love is Blind, and somebody had posted it. Like, there's a big Love is Blind Facebook discussion group that I'm in. It's like got tons of people, thousands.
So don't try to justify being in it. You're in it. It doesn't matter who else is in it.
This is true. This is very true.
You're like billions of people.
Everyone's doing it. So
I didn't start it.
I don't admin it. No, but they were talking about how – wait, what were we just talking about?
The application.
Oh, the application. Okay, somebody had posted a link to, like, the actual Love is Blind. They found it online and posted it for everyone to, like, pick apart the questions and stuff. It's a pretty long application, and, like, they ask some, like, pretty hard-hitting questions, like, about, like, your past relationship experience and, like – I personally would never get on the show because filling out that application would be – like it looked like a college application. It was so much. I was like, no.
And neither of us finished college, so.
And, like, the answer – they wanted, like, well-thought-out responses. Like, they're like, tell us about a time when you did – you know, whatever. No. I'm like, no. So anyway.
No.
I guess everybody who's been on the show took the time to thoughtfully fill out the questionnaire, and someone like Chelsea was sitting there like, this one is great.
Yay! She just is too much for me. I've decided we should ban Chelsea's from Love is Blind and Jessica's. I don't want either one of them, and I don't want men in capri pants telling me anything.
You know, it's this is just real quick. Since, because I didn't know Chelsea and Kwame were going to even be at the reunion, but since you just brought them up, I've been meaning to tell you that there's this guy I see at the gym like almost every day, and I've always been like, why does he look so familiar? Like every time I see him, I'm like, his face. Like I just want to like, I'm like, do I know this person? Have I ever met him? I figured out the other day he looks exactly like Kwame.
Huh. Well, it could be Kwame because apparently her new job allows him to travel all the time. Oh. So maybe he's just traveling here all the time.
Maybe.
Oh, it was so obnoxious. When she said that, I was like, it's corrupt. This whole thing is corrupt. We knew it. And now I'm mad.
Yes. Well, the one thing I did was surprised by is that like they had so many people from past seasons at this.
It was obnoxious.
Like everyone was there.
They did nothing. They did nothing except for Lauren and Cameron, and those are the only ones we would have cared about.
They're
anyway.
So cute.
They are. It was just obnoxious. All the people that did that were up there, like the OGs. Vanessa kept saying original gangsters.
No. Oh my gosh,
Vanessa. And she kept saying that, and she said they would just ask an audience question, and that was like all they did. Like truly, and they all looked like they were going to prom, and they all looked like the theme was Little Mermaid. Like, I just did not enjoy it at all. Now, there were two things. They did do, like, Jessica called Jimmy out for something. He's like, you left after 15 minutes. She's like, nope, I left after an hour and a half. He's like, well, it felt like 15 minutes. Anyway, it was some interview. Well, then they cut and they show us, because you're editing this and not doing it live, how long the timer was. And it was more than an hour and a half. She was right. Like, he was lying and making something up. So there were a couple things like that where it was like, oh, okay, well, that was good. AD went on two dates with Matthew after this.
Hold on.
Matthew. I know.
What?
He, like, made her dinner or something. And this is even after she knew that he told her and another girl the same thing. So AD's nails are no longer red, but they should be brighter red. They should be like, she should have to wear that like mask thing that makes your face red or like that and like go through life like that. Cause everything is a red flag, ma'am. You're just missing them.
Yes. Yeah. That's wild. No, I didn't. I would not have seen that coming. She looked beautiful though. And I actually went online and already like looked up. I was like, I really want that dress. But then I was like, where am I ever going to wear that? I'm not getting invited to anything that I need something like.
Oh my gosh.
I just want to wear it around my living room.
Please don't do that to yourself, your family, anything, generations that come after us. I mean, that's basically it. It was a real who's who of nobodies.
Yeah, I mean, it sounded like it was rather boring, so.
It was. I mean, the most fun I had was talking about it. I truly hated it.
Yeah.
But we'll be back for season 7, I'm sure.
We will. Yeah, we will, because I will never learn.
I got to see how Chelsea does with these casting.
I feel like there's been a lot of complainers, especially, you know what, and I bet you Chelsea is in that giant Facebook group that everyone is in. Hopefully she goes in there and reads how irritated everyone was with like different things about this season. I want to see some people walk down the aisle. I think if you go on the show, you got to go down the aisle. If you say no, you say no.
I think they did that the first year. Yes. That's what it used to be.
Right. Like if you say no, that's fine. But I feel like everyone should have to go to the altar.
I also want somebody to describe their own face as homely, and that's the kind of people I want on there. I want people whose faces are not symmetrical. No one's told them they look like Megan Fox. Like, truly just, like, normal-looking people. Every one of these people looks like an Instagram influencer, except for the dudes.
Yeah, mostly. Well, yes, it's true. A couple of them. Well, you know.
I'm heated. All right.
All right. Well, that was that.
There you go.
All right, guys. That was the episode for this week. Hope you enjoyed it. We will be back next week. Same time, same place, new story.
Have a great week.
Bye.